You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Paranormal Portal. I'm your host, Brent Thomas, and I'm absolutely thrilled you guys are here with me tonight. And today, or whenever you're listening to the show, but got a really special show lined up for you all. So I'm really excited to unravel this. This is a chance to reach around the globe and have a heart-to-heart discussion with my counterpart on the other side of the world. So that's pretty exciting. But if you've got an experience or an encounter of your very own and you'd like to submit it to the show, then please email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. And I'll be really looking forward to seeing all those submissions. So, but tonight I want to welcome to the show Mr. Cade Moya. Now, Cade is a podcaster from down in Australia, and he kind of has he totally has a paranormal podcast down there that's doing amazing, just a really well done production, and the guy puts a lot of heart and soul into what he's doing, and he's doing great things down there. But welcome to the show, brother, and thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks, mate. It's a pleasure to be on.
It's my pleasure. You know, you and I have just recently met each other, but the paranormal just seems to suck you in, doesn't it? I mean, how did this journey kind of start for you?
Oh, mate, it's a funny story, because I've had a bit of a lifetime full of these little weird encounters that I wouldn't hold to full-on experiences, but they're just enough for me to intrigue myself into the world of the paranormal. So I guess it kind of starts with, I believe I once saw a Yowie only just recently. And I say maybe the last 4 years. Oh, and for those who don't know, a Yowie is the Australian version of the Bigfoot or the Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say, for Australian pride, ours are a little bit bigger. Oh, yeah. They're 6 to 11 feet tall.
Oh, nice. Okay. They are pretty good size then.
Yeah, absolutely. And I used to live in this very wooded area, and I had a house and we built it, and it was on the side of a cliff. It was absolutely fantastic. But because it was on the side of a cliff, it had to be built on these really, really big poles. And they were about 13 meters off the ground. And wow. I cannot convert that to the Americanized number system, because I only know metric. Yeah. The rest just freaks me out.
They're just really tall.
yeah, absolutely. And I remember looking over my balcony, and I saw across this. We had this big alley, not an alleyway, more like an easement where there was just nothing but rainforest. Mm-hmm. And I see a silhouette of this creature, and I couldn't see any definition to it or anything like that, but where we were standing, it would have had to been about 9-10 foot tall.
Oh man.
And it just disappeared, and it kind of made me start to connect a couple of dots between what I was hearing when living above a rainforest to what I saw, because I would hear wood knocks. I would hear like a bipedal thing walking around the house. But because where I live in Australia, it's not uncommon to have large birds or anything like that walking through the rainforest as well. So I was never really cemented on that idea that is that a Yowie walking down underneath my house?
Mm-hmm.
But it, when I saw this thing across the alleyway, I kind of thought, maybe it is. Maybe that is a Yowie down there.
That's pretty solid, brother. I mean, and what an amazing opportunity to see something that, you know, only, you know, very few people actually get to lay eyes on them, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, I only saw it for a very, very split second because it was kind of out of the corner of my eye. And by the time I looked back at it, it was almost disappeared from my field of view. But yeah, it kind of stuck with me, and it kind of led me on this path to try find out more about it. And then I got stuck into podcasts like The Confessionals, Sasquatch Chronicles, things like that, and I was just hooked ever since.
Yeah, those are amazing shows, and Tony and Wes do phenomenal jobs. In fact, that's funny because you know, for the Paranormal Portal, I pretty much cut my teeth in the Bigfoot world listening to Wes. You know, I mean, I worked in a cubicle in a company, and I'd be sitting there and I'd put in my earbuds because I didn't need to talk on the phone or anything. And I'd just go through my day listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. And I started to get this bug. I was like, you know, I think I really want to do this, but I'd like to do it about all of the paranormal. But I really patterned a lot of what I do and how I do it off of Wes, or at least I pay homage to that as much as I can, because he's just got such an amazing show. He has such a great presence, and I agree with him in a lot of ways that I think we learn more probably talking to the people who experience it rather than just exclusively from researchers and people that have ideas, because I don't know how it is in Australia, brother, but for the Yowie community, but in the US, the Bigfoot community is really kind of really fractured and splintered in a lot of ways. And there seems to be a lot of competition rather than cooperation. But you don't get that from experiencers, people that are experiencing things and calling in going, hey, this is what happened. This is what I saw, and I don't know what to do with it, but it's just blowing me away. And it ends up being a really cathartic experience for those people too, because a lot of times at the end of those, you'll hear like, wow, it feels really good to finally talk to somebody about this, you know?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I mean, down here in Australia, there seems to still be a lot of stigma around these things. So a lot of people are a little bit hesitant to talk about, you know, I saw an imaginary monster that's not exposed to exist.
Right.
And I've got a lot of feedback from people who've come on my show that this is the first time that they've ever felt they could speak to someone about it and not feel like they're judged or going to get ridiculed, because the listeners that I have for our show, they're fully supportive, and it's really like a little community now. It's amazing.
Yeah. And that's true too for the portal. And it's something I take a lot of pride in is the fact that somehow people seem to find the shows. Now we also do, we not only do the podcasting, on the Revolver Network, which is the same network that, Wes and Tony are on, but we also do a YouTube show as well. And, you know, we've been streaming live, and the chat rooms and the community that's formed around the live shows has been really amazing. And, we've actually kind of formed this, community of people that are also willing to extend themselves to help. And by that, I mean, we've got paranormal investigators, we've got, UFO researchers and experiencers, and we've got, Bigfoot, researchers and, psychics. And it's just really turned out to be kind of a hidden perk, because I'll get people reaching out with their problems. They'll have these terrible hauntings and things they're experiencing, and it feels really good to go, well, you know what? I know someone I can put you in touch with, and I've made connections for people, and to hear back that, hey, it was great. Everything's taken care of. Thank you so much. So the community really is a big part of these shows, isn't it?
Oh, it really is. And to know that you can just help someone by sharing their story, which then it's a knock-on effect. That may help someone else. It's such a great feeling.
Right, and it snowballs, right?
Absolutely.
So now explain to me a little bit about the dynamics of the Yowie, because I can't pretend I know a whole lot about it. I'm, you know, decently versed in the North American, you know, Sasquatch, Bigfoot. But how, as far as you understand it, what are the differences between a Bigfoot and a Yowie, or is there any?
Oh, look, I'll tell you from the differences I've noticed from the people who've come on my show, because, I mean, my experience was over 50 meters away, so it doesn't really hold much value.
Sure.
But the people who have come on my show who have almost face-to-face encounters with these creatures is they're very much, you know, the same creature that you have over there.
Okay.
In the sense that the Sasquatch and the Bigfoot. However, the main thing that I've noticed that is different between the creatures is the Yowie seem to have a rounder head.
Oh, okay. So they're
where
not...
the Sasquatch seems to have a little bit more of an oblong type of shape.
Oh, okay. Now that's interesting. So are they also known to have the canonical? I don't want to say canonical. The cone head. Do they also have the sagittal crest? I guess
That's what, okay. I mean. They're more like a human head, where it's that more traditional shaped head. Where like the Sasquatch and the Bigfoot, they do have that cone shape, which is the number one thing that I have found to be different between these two creatures.
That's really interesting. Now, in the U.S., we have this idea of. Well, many researchers have the idea that there's like different types. So a type one would be consistent with the Patterson-Gimlin film, that description. It would be like the type one. So a very, very large, strong animal being. I don't want to say animal because I think they're so much more intelligent than that. But being mostly covered in hair. And then the type two allegedly look more chimp-like. Excuse me just a sec. I got to mute. Been talking for a few hours, so
you're right, man.
I'm a little froggy, but the type twos look more chimpanzee-like in the facial features, or more ape-like, and then there's a type three that really looks like a hairy man, like a human being, very much the same in a lot of the features, seeming to resemble in a great extent the Native Americans of North America, and then there's the type four, which researchers identify as having more of a baboon type of snout, so almost an elongated snout. So those are some of the variations that are reported here. Do you have a similarity to that in the Yowies, or are they pretty consistently described in one way?
It's either – there's two types that I've really encountered. It's they look like a man, a hairy man, or they look like a monkey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so more like a chimpanzee, but a little bit hairier.
Oh, gotcha. But huge though. They're both types.
gigantic, absolutely huge. But what's really interesting is Australia also has. It's almost like an offshoot. It's like the spin-off to the Yowie.
Okay.
Called the and this pronunciation is really tough. So okay. It's Junjudi, which is basically a mini version of a Bigfoot. So. They're these like hairy little humanoid looking creatures that have basically big round heads as well, covered in black fur. And they usually only get to about 3 foot tall.
Wow. Okay. So they're very diminutive then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like the polar opposite of what the Yowie is. And a lot of reports come in and say that these are maybe juvenile Yowies, but they don't look juvenile. They look fully grown.
So we have a similar thing in the U.S. as well. There's a kind of a very rural name for them, and I think they're called like Apple Snitch or something like that. And they're described very much the same way, as you know, like a 2 to 3 feet tall, but very hairy and very ape looking or monkey looking. And there's the Albata Witch is another one, I think. But yeah, we have a similarity to that over here. with the little people and stuff. There's also apparently gnomes, puckwudgies, duendes, all these other little things. Do you have other legends of other little creatures over there like that?
Oh, look, we not in traditional Aboriginal folklore. I think more so through pop culture and things like that. You know, with scary stories that just kind of get spread, and it's almost, you know, fact is stranger than fiction when it comes to this type of stuff.
Yeah,
but it's really we don't have a lot of cryptids in that sense, because we go into these really weird and fascinating creatures like the bunyip, which. Sure. When you think of the bunyip here in Australia, it's almost like it's a family, because there's so many different versions of them. And basically, a lot of Aboriginals around Australia, they kind of have their own version of the bunyip. And essentially, they're kind of like the boogeyman from way back in the day.
Okay.
And essentially, it's kind of like almost a walrus-type creature. But it all depends on which one you're looking at, because there's so many different types that are kind of expressed in older folklore.
Okay.
So, you know, they have tusks, they'll have flippers, they'll have tails, they'll have one eye, they might have five eyes. It's it's kind of this mishmash of a creature, and they're absolutely fascinating. No one I've ever spoken to has ever witnessed a bunyip. I think it's just an old wives' tale to scare children.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Especially with all those creepy features that it may or may not have. That sounds absolutely terrifying. Now, in the U.S., we often joke that, you know, oh my God, Australia, everything wants to kill you down there. You got these huge spiders, and you got, of course, the saltwater crocs, and you got bunyips and yowies, and a whole catalog of actually catalog species down there that'll wreck your whole existence in a hurry. So,
we don't have to worry about the cryptids too much.
Yeah, your normal fauna will wreck your whole life. So, yeah. But the interesting thing is that there are so many people that still experience these strange and bizarre creatures. And as I'm doing the show many times, Cade, and I got to ask you if this is similar to your experience. Oftentimes we'll get these, for lack of a better term, like these rogue explanations or descriptions of things that don't seem to match anything I've ever heard of before. And so it's very puzzling. Like, for instance, have you heard of the rake? Have you heard of that down there?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So the rake is a new term. And now from what I've been able to ascertain about the rake is that the term rake is new, but the creature that it describes seems to really match the classical definition of what was used to be known as a ghoul. In other words, these hairless, naked creatures that would feast on corpses or whatever in folklore. Are you familiar with ghouls?
Yeah.
Okay. So, but sometimes we'll get different explanations, like things that don't even match up to anything I've ever heard before. Like, what are some of them? But now that I'm thinking about it, it's going to be hard.
Well, I can give you an example from one of my episodes.
Absolutely.
So I had this gentleman who came on the show, and he lived in rural New South Wales, and he said that he saw this creature. He's never seen anything like it before. You can't even find an example of it online or anyone else running into it. And essentially what it was is basically it was like a baby-sized rake that had these claws for fingers and had a mouth almost full of shark-like teeth.
Oh, God.
And he was absolutely mad enough to try chase this creature, because he's like, no one's going to believe me. Oh. So he went to go chase it, and it almost had like an infrasound effect on him, he was just thrown down onto the ground in pain from this almost like supersonic noise that he was hearing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I've never heard of anything like that in my life.
Right. So this little midget rake with infrasound, that's absolutely terrifying.
absolutely. And it's actually really caused this almost a community of people to go out in this area to try find this creature.
And nobody else has seen it?
Not yet.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and maybe that's good. Maybe it's just gone, hopped in the ship and went home or whatever the deal is. But
yeah, for sure.
So with like infrasound, again, are the Yowies attributed with infrasound as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that is a commonality as well between the two species.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the way that I just interviewed this lady and her story was absolutely fascinating. She had a family of Yowies that surrounded her rural property. Mm-hmm. And the infrasound that they did, I believe this is to be an infrasound, I guess, side effect, is it started to almost warp her reality, where she would be looking at her fingers and her fingers were growing at 2 or 3 times their normal length.
Oh, wow.
It was really, really weird. And not only that, she would hear like tremendous tropical rain. And when it rains in my part of the world, it absolutely buckets down. And that's what she was hearing. But she would go outside, nothing.
Oh, man. That's strange.
Yeah, it's really, really weird. So I don't know if you've had anyone come on your show and say they've had infrasound effects like that.
Not like that. I mean, I've certainly heard of people, had people on that claimed to be getting zapped. In other words, they were just all of a sudden they're out of sorts and then they just feel like they're dazed and confused. And many people have claimed that it took like a day or days to get back to normal. Like whatever had happened, whatever this infrasound is, it really screws people up for quite a period of time.
Yeah, oh, it definitely does. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on what you think infrasound might be?
Well, I mean, of course, it's documented in the natural animal kingdom with tigers and elephants use infrasound. Tigers use it as they're stalking their prey to get them in that dazed and confused state so that, you know, obviously it's improves their chances of predation. But I'm not sure how elephants utilize it, but I imagine it's has the same effect. But for some reason, the frequency of that sound seems to really disrupt the neurological functions in the brain. Or maybe it really attacks the inner ear and causes that whole equilibrium shift that takes a while to sort. I don't know, but it is really curious, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really, really fascinating because these people, they take quite a while to recover from what they've just had happen to them, essentially.
Yeah. Now, have you also heard of, with Bigfoot investigating, I often hear claims of that not only are they maybe transdimensional, and I don't know what to think about things like that because I don't have a point of reference, but in just listening to what people have reported that, you know, I've had reports of a guy called in once and said, you know, I saw it. I was in a field behind my house in the woods. There was a field right before the woods, tall grass, but he said he could only see this Bigfoot from the waist up. Everything below that didn't exist. Like it was half phased in, half phased out. But we often get reports of people having malfunctioning gear, like you know, their camera won't work, or their phone won't work, or you know, if they have like an infrared scope, that won't work. Lots of equipment failures that seem to suggest like an EM field being present as well. Are you familiar with that in what you've heard?
In nearly every case. Wow. That I've spoken to someone. Yeah. I don't know, maybe this is a Yowie trait, is they almost seem to just disappear in front of people.
Yes. Now, go ahead. Go ahead.
And it's almost like they're just walking across, say, a bush track or something like that. And I've had people say, I saw it disappear.
Yeah. Doesn't that just cook your bacon? I mean, how do you handle that? What do you do with that?
Oh, It's really interesting because I have a theory that, you know, maybe they're not these dimensional creatures. I just think the Yowie, or, you know, the Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, mm-hmm. that's just their evolution.
Yeah.
In the sense that you know, we evolve and we use technology to, you know, improve ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I essentially believe that the Yowie, their technology is the bush. It's the rainforest. It's the forest that they're in.
Sure.
And essentially, they're the masters of their domain. So if they know how to walk a certain angle, turn a different way, they can essentially become part of the bush and turn invisible to the human eye.
Right. No, that's a great explanation.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it – well, not exactly, but that's just my theory on what that might be because, I mean, evolution happens and we're doing it with technology. Why can't they do it with what their technology would be?
That's brilliant. I really like that. That might be the first time that somebody has explained that in a way that makes sense to me. And I've heard other people try to explain it in natural terms, but it's never quite shifted in my head correctly. But what you're saying really makes sense to me, and I commend you on that. But I've thought about this so much, and I've even thought, you know, maybe they're able to even shift the pigment in their skin, like a cuttlefish or an octopus, you know, how they can just like suddenly become a piece of coral because they can shift their skin and pigmentation into an exact pattern match to whatever they're by. I've thought
totally. That's a really fantastic point as well.
Well, I don't know if it is or not because, you know, I mean, it's one of those things that there's of course no other precedent except with marine life or iguanas to a degree. But I don't know. I think you're right, though. They probably would know how to exploit our biology. And by that, I mean, I'm sorry if I'm maybe sounding a little scattered, but this is really exciting for me to just kind of compare notes. But years ago, I went to a science museum when I lived in Minnesota. And there was an exhibit, and it was talking about the human body. And there was this one exhibit that they had in there that discussed the eyes. And if you stood on this one point, there were these two pretty good-sized black dots that were at almost a 45-degree angle, but maybe a little less or a little more than that. Maybe they were at about a 50, 55-degree angle. But they were a certain specific distance away, to the right and to the left of center. So you're looking straight ahead. But when you got into the certain marked spot on the floor, you could see them on the first spot, but then they have you walk slowly up to the second spot. And so you walk slowly up to the second spot, and sure enough, those two dots absolutely disappear. They just quit existing. And the way they explain it, of course, is that this is a natural gap in our visual field, but our brains make it seem seamless. So we actually do have gaps in our visual field. And is it possible, by some measure, and I think I actually saw it on the X-Files one time too, but they were discussing this very thing, that there are parts of our visual field that really just don't exist. Our eyes can't see them, but our brain fills it in to make it look like it's absolutely smooth and seamless. So could they know how to exploit that? And I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's a really interesting theory, isn't it?
It's just, you know, the thing with the paranormal that is my fallback is just that every theory is just as valid as any other because we just don't know. We just don't know.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Nobody knows. And that's the great thing about hearing everyone's story, because usually everyone tells a story that's just a little bit different, and it just shines a light on this topic that is just, it just makes you look at things different every time. And I think that's fantastic.
It really is. And it's an ever evolving idea, I guess the paranormal is, but, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break. So just hold on for just a couple minutes and we will be right back with more of, Cade Moir and the Paranormal Portal in just a moment. Don't go away.
Thank you.
right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Hope you had a good break, and welcome back. I am Brent Thomas, your host, and I'm joined by Cade Moore, who is the host and creator of Believe, which is a podcast, paranormal podcast, brilliantly done. Excellent job, Cade, on that, by the way. But thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thanks, mate. It's like I said, it's an absolute pleasure, and it's really refreshing and fun to talk about these topics with someone else in the field.
Right. Now, that's a good question. Do you ever get out in the field yourself?
No, I don't. Okay. See, where I live, it's I'm so far away from other communities because I live in a tropical paradise part of Australia.
Oh, nice.
And it's so fantastic, but up here it's a little bit scarce in the sense that we don't usually get a lot of paranormal events or anything like that. So a lot of that happens a lot further south. I basically live right at the top of Australia, and all that happens all the way down the bottom, and that's about 5,000 kilometers away. It's a lifetime away. So.
It is a huge country. It definitely is. But do you have winters where you're at, by the way?
Oh, look, we are just coming out of our winter, and for us, a cold day would be about 14 degrees Celsius.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
it's rarely get out of shirts and shorts territory where I live.
Are you guys, is there, yeah, you have to send me some rental information there, because I'm in my happy place when I'm in my shorts and t-shirt, and we're just starting to peak towards fall here, and it's really got me kind of bummed. So I'm envious, brother. Maybe living in paradise, even your ghosts are happy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, where I'm from, there's not a lot of haunting activity, so that could explain quite a lot. We do have a lot of Yowie and UFO activity, but in the terms of hauntings, we're quite quiet.
Oh, okay. So how about UFOs? Have you ever seen one?
Yeah, I have. I've seen two.
Ooh, fantastic. Would you mind sharing that?
Do you want to hear the story?
I would love to hear the story. Yeah.
So when I was in high school, I used to work on boats. So I used to basically repair boats, so I paint them, things like that. Mm-hmm. And the boat I was working on, it got actually called out by the Navy to participate in some war games. Oh. And while we were out doing the war games, we basically, the boat that I was on, it was supposed to be a pretend pirate ship.
Oh.
And that's essentially the war games that they were trying to replicate, is people sneaking into Australia.
Oh, gotcha.
And they had helicopters and kind of everything going around, and we got installed with some very, very big spotlights.
Okay.
And essentially we got told over the radio that you guys need to shut your spotlights off immediately because there's something we don't know flying around. Oh. And all of a sudden there was this bright light, would have been much bigger than the moon, but it was very, very low. And it kind of hovered over the ocean edge and basically shot right over us and the big Navy ship, and essentially everything was called off after that.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite a sight to behold, and there was no explanation ever done for it. Who knows, it could have been part of the Navy games, but for 16-year-old me, that was a live UFO that I saw.
That's amazing. So it was just a big orb, a big orb of light is what it appeared as?
Just a big bright light. It was fascinating. And the speed it shot off at, it was at that time, I couldn't think anything. No human made aircraft could fly that quick.
Wow. That's really intense.
It was quite a sight.
I've seen a UFO myself, and it's an interesting story. If you don't mind, I'll just go over it quickly.
Because, absolutely.
Well, what had happened was I live in the north tip of Idaho, which is almost in Canada land. I mean, like, we're like Canada light here, so we're right up on the edge. But I used to live in Minnesota, and I would telecommute for this company I was working at, which was headquartered in the town that I live in now. And I would have to travel out here quite a bit because of work meetings and stuff and vendor meetings and et cetera, et cetera. So I flew out here one time and the boss of the company said, hey, you know, I've got a mountain house. It's all done, but we don't live there yet. But while you're in town, rather than get you a hotel, do you just want to stay in our house in the mountains? And I was like, well, yeah, that'd be nice. So I was up there alone in his mountain cabin. It used to be a mountain cabin, but he built it into a big house. And I'm up there by myself, and it's about late, maybe March. Yeah, I guess I'm thinking it's late spring. So I'm thinking about March. And I'm up there, and he's got night vision binoculars. And I was really excited about that because, for one, there's no noise pollution out there. There's just no unnatural light. It's just blank sky in the mountains and no light pollution from any cities or streetlights. And secondly, because most of the stars in our galaxy are red stars and are not readily visible with the naked eye, so that, you know, you actually need help with infrared to see all of the stars that are present. And so I got out the night vision binoculars after I was up there. It was all dark. It was a beautiful night. There was a little bit of a moon, but the sky was just like a jewel box, just glowing. And so I got out the night vision binoculars and turned them on and looked up at the sky, and it was just amazing. There were so many more stars in the sky that I couldn't recognize constellations anymore. It was just, there was all these new lights that were in the visual field with these night vision binoculars. And so I'm looking and looking and looking around. And this is pretty much the first time in my life I've ever got to play with night vision binoculars. So I start dorking around and looking around the valley. And the house is situated on one side of a mountain valley. And there's a stream running down below about maybe 250 yards down from the house. And then it, of course, goes up to the other side of the mountain valley in the distance. And so I'm looking over to the opposite side of the mountain valley, and these are only 5 power binoculars, so they're not really a whole lot of magnification going on, but a little bit. And I'm looking at the trees on the other valley, and it's, you know, dark enough that I couldn't really see much with my naked eye, but I could see it so clearly with the night vision, and I'm having fun. And I look down to the side that I'm on. I pan over and look down the driveway, which is pitch black because it's under the canopy of the trees. But in the night vision, I can see it, and I'm looking around, and I suddenly pan up. And on top of this great big pine tree, about 30 feet above it, looking through the night vision binoculars, is a huge saucer sitting there.
No kidding.
Sitting there silently in the night sky. And it's like the two proverbial pie plates, you know, but there's a gap between them. And in this gap between the two pie plates making up the saucer are these panels. And these panels are lighting up in a circular motion going around and around and around. It's got lights on the top pie plate and the bottom pie plate, but they're very subtle. But these flashing lights going around, and I was like, oh my God, you know, I've seen a flying saucer, like the proverbial flying saucer sitting right here in this mountain valley with me. And I'm just having a field day. I wasn't afraid at all, but I was just absolutely beside myself, because all my life I'd always had room in my belief system for there being visitors from other planets and there being UFOs. I just always believed that that was the case. But all my life I'd been looking at the night sky and never seeing anything that was anomalous. And I was always disappointed by that because, you know, hearing all the stories of other people that's seen it. But there it was now in front of me. I'm looking through the night vision binoculars, and I'm just in awe. And I looked for probably 30 seconds, and it's just sitting there motionless, and it was dead quiet. Not a sound could be heard from this craft, which was maybe 200 yards away from me above this tree. And I'm just tickled because I know in that instance, it's not just a belief that there's other things out there. Now I know they're out there. I mean, I'm seeing it right before me. And I thought, oh my God, I got to see this with my own eyes. I lower the binoculars. I can see the trees. I can see the stars behind. I can see everything except the UFO is not there.
Oh, that's amazing.
I put up the binoculars. It's still there, just sitting there hovering, waiting. I put down the binoculars, it's invisible. I put them up, it's there. Took them down, it's invisible. And I'm like, oh my God, they're cloaked. We can't see them. They can't be seen. This craft could not be seen with my naked eyes. It was able to hide from the light spectrum that my eyes perceive. somehow. And I don't pretend to know the physics of that, but I know that I could see it in the night vision perfectly. When I lowered the binoculars, it was not there. There was no sound, no indication it was there at all. And there was enough ambient moonlight that, and plus the thing was giving off light. I should, by every intents and purposes, have been able to see it just as clearly, and it should have been like a Spielberg presentation above the tree there, but it wasn't there. And I was like, oh my God, how they can hide. They're hidden from our normal vision. And then I thought they could be around us anytime, any day. They could be right above us, watching us, and we wouldn't know it. And then I thought, oh, wow. And so I'm just rattling my brain with this new knowledge, this new information. I'd never heard of this before because I really wasn't a UFO researcher by any measure at this time. And then it kind of occurred to me that I was looking at them, and I'm in this mountain valley, and I'm alone in this mountain valley, so I'm the only thing going on there. Chances are they're sitting there above that tree looking at me. I was like,
what was going through your mind at that point?
At that point, Cade, I was like, this is as real as I need it to be. I don't need this to get more real. I'm done. I'm going to bed. And so I turned off the binoculars, put them in the case, went in the house, locked the doors, and I sat on the bed for the next 3 hours until about 4 a.m. And every once in a while, peeking out the blinds to see if anything was going to be coming. And to my recollection, nothing else happened. So I assume that was the end of the experience. But that was my encounter, brother.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible, Brent. Might be one of the most amazing UFO encounters that I have ever heard.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, it was amazing to me. I really thought I was onto something. I really thought that nobody had ever figured this out before. So I, as soon as I got home, went online to UFO groups and stuff, and I was like, hey, and they're like, oh yeah, researchers are always using night vision. I was like, oh, I thought I was onto something that nobody else had figured out before, but apparently that's been reported before that they couldn't see it. I'd never heard of that though.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think the most recent video of that TikTok Tic Tac UFO that got released, that could only be seen in infrared as well.
Oh, okay. Well, then, I didn't know that. I know that they were cycling from infrared and allegedly just normal vision, because you see it change color, the display change color, and what I read on it was that they were using, it's a Raytheon build of the scope they were using, but I think they cycled between normal and infrared, and it was there both ways, but I might be wrong. I don't mean to disagree.
Every chance that I could be wrong on that one, mate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we both could be, I don't know, but I think I was really impressed by that, by the way, that they did release that. And I was really encouraged because I was hoping maybe we're getting close to disclosure. Maybe. What are your thoughts on that, brother?
Oh, it's a good topic, isn't it? Because you look at what the mass media is doing at the moment, and I only spoke to a director of some UFO documentaries here in Australia just last night about this topic. So it's fresh on my mind, and he seems to think, and I'm very much in the same boat as him, that the media is almost priming the public for disclosure.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's something to it. But what do you think about, like, you ever hear of the Project Bluebeam, that whole theory of Project Bluebeam? Where?
No, what happened?
Okay, so Project Bluebeam is essentially, it's kind of like creating holograms. And there's some people in the community more on the conspiracy side of things, but they believe that perhaps the government will stage, or the governments or whatever, however this stuff works. And I'm not a big conspiracy person because I just don't know what to think about all that. And I don't pretend to have enough information, but that they would stage some kind of alien invasion and would roll out backwards engineered craft that look like they're from outer space and, implement a whole domination of the world based on this new threat that really doesn't exist. But I don't know what to think about stuff like that.
it's a little far-fetched sometimes, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's just like, you know, as I go through this and I've been familiar with the conspiracy community for a long time, because I worked in preparedness for a number of years, and that goes hand in hand when you sell long-term food storages and stuff, and the conspiracy communities. That's just that's the demographic, is the people that are waiting for, you know, doomsday to come. But
yeah, of course.
You know, the problem with that is that as I was so familiar with all of the different conspiracies, it didn't seem to matter what was going on. Those same people would find a conspiracy related to it. And it's just like at some point you just got to go, no, we're just going way too deep into the pool here. We're drinking too much Kool-Aid on this one. So I don't know, but you know, I don't mean to disparage anybody, their beliefs. I don't pretend to know either way, I guess is what I'm saying. But I just find that I'm one person and I probably can't do much about it anyway. So I'm just going to do me, you know?
Yeah. I'll happily be blissfully unaware until I need to be aware, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the best way to look at it. But yeah, the UFO stuff is really, really interesting. But I, you know, I'm starting to see kind of a similarity with the Bigfoot field, with the UFO fields, in that there's the conspiracy UFO people, then there's the UFO people, and then there's the hardcore scientific UFO people, and never shall the three meet. There's just such a chasm in all of that, you know, that they don't ever seem to, you know, come together on their thinking, because there's so many agendas at work depending on who you're talking to.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of a real shame, really, because there's no reason to say that any of those parties are more right or more wrong than the others.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean,
until we have our hands on a UFO, that's mm-hmm. the only way we're ever really going to know who's right in the end.
Well, you know, I had Donald Schmidt on the show, and he was part of the J. Allen Hynek Institute. He was the lead investigator for a number of years, and he's also the co-founder of the Roswell Museum and Research Center. And he was just an amazing guest, and he talked a lot about the fact that you know, there was quite a big cover-up in the whole Roswell crash in New Mexico in 1947.
Yeah, really?
It crashed. It left about a mile of different trenches as it bounced off the ground. A whole regiment of the military was dispatched. The Air Force was dispatched to collect it. They gave a press release that says, yeah, there was a UFO collected. And then the next day, the official press release changed to, no, it was a weather balloon. So they covered it up right away. And Donald was really amazing with the background information that he had, and the amount of contacts he had made over there, and the interviews that he had conducted with people that were related to the people who were present for all these events. And it was it really seems like an episode of The X-Files. It was just so incredibly bizarre, but the amount of cover-up and the amount of burying that went on, and the amount of intimidation that went on to keep these people quiet was just profound.
Wow.
Yeah.
It really makes you think, if someone's going to that much effort to put people's lives in, you know, in danger or at risk, there's obviously some truth to it.
Right, right, yeah. And I certainly couldn't argue with the guy. I mean, he came into it a skeptic. When he first started to do this journey, he entered into it with the, yeah, let's go down there and put an end to this, because, you know, they really didn't believe that it was anything but a weather balloon when they started. But they also went in with the fact that whatever happened, they were going to follow it until they got the answers they needed. Well, they're still following it, and they're getting more and more answers here and there, but the intrigue just keeps getting deeper as well. So I really believe the guy. I really believe what he's saying. And he certainly isn't the type of person that is just spewing this because he wants to believe something. He's just tenacious and the depth and the effort that they've put into this has just been second to none.
That's fantastic. And it's always good to go in with that open mind, because yes, it's really, really easy to go in there and have preconceived notions that you want to move your investigation towards one certain answer. Right. And to go in there with that open mind, that open view, that will bring you more answers than anything.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's just, it's an incredible journey, but, you know, the paranormal is an incredible journey, right?
Oh, it's fantastic. Every week I get so excited. I get to speak to new people about these new stories, their new encounters, things that I've never thought could happen to someone. It always surprises me.
Yeah, it really does. And you never know. You're never going to have the same show twice. You never will.
Yeah, exactly. That's the exciting part about it. Could be the same experience, but it's never the same outcome.
Right. Yeah, I agree, brother. But I've really, really enjoyed getting the chance to talk to you and getting a chance to get to know you and to create this relationship on the other side of the world. I'm just having a blast.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, mate. And it's been such an honor to be a guest on your show.
Well, and the honor's all mine, too. I'm really excited because I can see that we're going to need to have a lot more discussions.
I think so.
In the 50 minutes that we've been talking, I've got so many more things I want to ask you about, and it's just great to have someone down there doing this work and bringing that all to our consciousness up here. Because sometimes I think we get into these microcosms, you know, like, well, that's the way it is here, so that's the way it is everywhere. But to hear your take on these things, to hear the differences, to, you know, have a chance to talk firsthand with you and the people in your community, it's neat to not only hear the correlations, but to hear the differences.
Absolutely. It's spot on. It's so good to talk to the people that I talk to and then hear the people that you talk to and just go, wow. It's happening everywhere.
Yeah, it's a global phenomenon, but thank you so much for being on, brother. I can't thank you enough for making this happen and making the time for us to get together to make this happen. But I definitely want to have you back as soon as we can, so I hope you're game.
Oh, absolutely, mate. I have plenty more to talk about.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to wrap it up for tonight, but I hope you enjoyed our journey down under and to Oz and all the... It just goes to show you that the Wizard of Oz was a tale, but the truth is stranger than the fictions. So I love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day. And remember to laugh as much as you can. Good night, everybody, and we'll see you next time on the Paranormal Portal Podcast.
sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.